So I'd like to introduce our speaker this morning, Adrian Crone, who is a professor of environmental science and religious studies at Allegheny College. Adrian.
Morning. If I asked you all to imagine someone who is part of the alternative food movement, you'd likely picture a white, middle to upper class professional shopping at a place like Whole Foods. You wouldn't be wrong. Many participants in the alternative food movement are people just like that. But the movement is also more complicated than that and more diverse than that. Many scholars have pointed out that communities of color are central to the movement and have brought food justice to the core of their work. But when I started doing my research back in 2013, hardly anyone was talking about the role of religion in the alternative food movement at all. That didn't seem right to me, so I decided to do more research. My recent book, Free Range Religion, is the result of that research, which I started 10 years ago. In the book, I describe four religious alternative food movement groups and show that religious people are part of this movement. And they aren't just changing what they eat. They are working to revolutionize the food system from the ground up. In my research, I use ethnographic methods. And so this means that I visit people where they are, learn about them, their work, their dietary and religious practices. And most of what I do is called participant observation, which basically means I do what they do. In this case, that meant planting, weeding, and harvesting, collecting soil samples, helping with educational programs, and preparing and eating a lot of food. I also conducted formal interviews to learn more about the religious values and ideals that people bring into these groups and were bringing into their work. I spent time with four alternative food movement groups for this project that were motivated by religious ideals. And as I spent time in these communities, I learned about the food systems that they were trying to create, but I also learned a lot about what religion looks like in these spaces. I called the book Free Range Religion because the religion that exists in these movements happens outside of traditional religious institutions, like churches, and it also incorporates practices that are often labeled as spiritual, like spending time in nature or meditating, which we just did. The religions in these alternative food movement groups were interesting combinations of various religious and secular ideas, trends, and practices. And so as I describe each of the four groups, you'll get a sense that they're kind of mostly Christian or mostly Jewish, but there's a lot more than that going on. And as I talk about them, I'll talk about the changes that we're trying to make in the food system and provide a little bit of a sense of the religious character of these groups. So we're just going to get brief overviews. So we'll start with the Adama Farm Fellowship. Adama is the Hebrew word for earth, and so this is an earth-centered Jewish site. It's located at the Isabella Friedman Jewish Retreat Center in Falls Village, Connecticut. And the fellowship program is a three-month program for young Jewish adults in their 20s and 30s. And during their 3 months there, they live together, farm together, learn together, and navigate Jewish practice together. The fellows grow most of the food that they eat during the program, and the farm also supports a community-supported agriculture program where people have a weekly share. A significant portion of food that goes to local food banks, a line of pickles and jams that they sell at farmers markets, and supplies produce into the retreat center kitchen. I spent most of my time there with 10 fellows who are all in their 20s and 30s, and they were living on site at the retreat center, mostly in a house called the Beit Adama, the House of Adama, though some lived in tents in the woods and came into the house for meals. And our days were spent working on the farm, making our own meals, taking classes on things like Judaism, agriculture, social justice, and many other topics. During the program, what the Ottumwa fellows eat is basically what they are producing. They order some grains and additional pastas and things from other places, but otherwise they're eating produce from their farm, eggs from their chickens. They milk their goats on site and make their own cheese and yogurt each week. A handmade poster that hangs in their kitchen connects these food practices with Jewish tradition, with a quote from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. A season is set for everything, a time for every experience under heaven, a time for planting, and a time for uprooting the planted. The poster summarizes the alternative food system at Ottumwa quite well. The fellows are eating food that they planted and uprooted themselves, and they are doing so in line with Jewish tradition and in keeping with what they understand to be Jewish values. In terms of religion, Ottumwa is a pluralistic Jewish community. The fellows come from a variety of Jewish backgrounds and navigate Jewish practice together as a community. And that often means working things out somewhere between Jewish law, Jewish values, and what they think they should be doing. And so as an example, Ottumwa has goats, which are milked daily in the spring and summer. And according to Jewish law, you are not actually permitted to milk a goat on Shabbat, because it's one of the prohibited practices of work on Shabbat. At Ottumwa, they talked a lot about this for many years with fellows from all different backgrounds, and a main point of their consideration was a Jewish value called Tsar Balei Chaim, which means prohibiting the suffering of living creatures. And they decided that in the interest of the well-being of the goats, they were going to milk these goats on Shabbat, even though that Jewish law would say they should not. But because some of the fellows are observant Jews who do keep kosher, and the kitchen in the house that they share is a kosher kitchen, they don't bring the milk into the house. And so the milk that is milked on Shabbat goes to non-Jewish neighbors off-site. And that's how they kind of worked out this, we're gonna consider Judaism, we're gonna consider some of these values, and also we're gonna do what makes sense for us, for our animals, for our community. The second site that I discuss in the book is called the Hallelujah Diet Health Retreat. This is a week-long retreat that is meant to help people adopt what is called the Hallelujah Diet. This is a raw vegan diet based on Genesis chapter 1, verse 29, which reads, "And God said, Behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat." So the creator of this diet, George Malkmus, interpreted this verse to mean that humans are meant to eat what Adam and Eve ate in the Garden of Eden, and that the human bodies were created to eat this raw, vegan, literally off the trees diet. A little bit of Malkmus's story. So he was a Baptist pastor, and he started this diet when he was himself diagnosed with colon cancer. And he had seen his mother go through treatment and had seen her get very ill and pass away. And so he decided to research alternative options. As he explains in his book, which is called The Hallelujah Diet, he switched his regular diet for this raw vegan diet, and according to him, his tumor went away. And so people come to this diet seeking healing from illness. Interestingly, what I saw in practice there is that they were all almost, I think just about everybody was also seeing medical doctors, right? And so even as the diet is saying it can fully heal people, they were also in treatment, having surgeries, attending various medical appointments. And so I attended this retreat with eight other people. Most of them were women, except for two men who were there with their wives. I was the youngest of this group. I was in my 30s at the time, and so most of the participants were in their 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s. Our hosts were a married couple and their adult son. At the Hallelujah Diet Health Retreat, we spent our days preparing food, going for walks, eating together, and watching a lot of educational videos. All of our food was vegan, but actually not all of it was raw. So George Malkmus had noticed that people struggled to follow the diet when it was completely raw vegan. So he suggested in the book a balance of 85% raw vegan food and 15% cooked vegan food, which allows you to eat things like rice and beans and feel sustained. At the retreat center, they actually altered this even further to 80% raw and 20% cooked. And so we did eat a fair amount of cooked food. The Hallelujah Diet also involves some things that would not have been available in the Garden of Eden, like juicing. And so we did a lot of juicing many, many pounds of carrots and kale and celery for our mandatory sun and juice breaks when we would have to sit outdoors in the direct North Carolina summer sun and drink our carrot and green juice. In terms of religion, all of the participants in the retreat, except for me, who's Jewish, were Protestant Christians of various, mostly mainline, but some evangelical denominations. Interestingly, the hosts were actually Messianic Jews, so Jews who do believe that Jesus was the Messiah. There were some interesting conversations throughout the retreat that revealed some significant theological differences among participants, but they usually ended with an agreement to just believe what they believed and respect each other. And so there were the conversations often ended very amicably with people saying, well, that's what you believe, this is what I believe, we're here for something else. The retreat also included a lot of practices that might be classified as New Age. Participants used and shared essential oils, herbal remedies. One participant taught yoga classes for us. But despite engaging in these practices, when I interviewed folks about them, they really went out of their way to tell me they didn't consider themselves to be New Age, and were glad to be at this Christian retreat center, which again is run by Messianic Jews. A really interesting kind of a combination of religious traditions was happening here. And so just a kind of sense of, right, the diet looks pretty Christian, and then on the ground, it looks much more complicated. The third site is called Baldwin Beef or Baldwin Family Farms. This is a family-owned cattle farm that sells 100% grass-fed beef in an on-site store at farmers markets in North Carolina and at grocery stores like Kroger and Whole Foods in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. I spent almost all of my time at Baldwin Family Farms with VMAC Baldwin, though I met some of the other family members in passing. Then this was intentional. He saw himself as spokesperson for the family and the business, and so he was the person I was permitted to talk to officially. We spent our time touring the farm, visiting the cows, gathering soil samples, and checking fences, which is a lot of the work when you're raising pasture-raised cattle. At Baldwin Beef, they raise Charolais cows entirely on grass. They have land, hundreds and hundreds of acres in North Carolina and into Virginia. And the beef that they produce is certified animal welfare approved. Interestingly, Baldwin Family Farms also breeds chickens to support the beef operation. It's very time-consuming and expensive to raise cattle 100% on grass without sending them to feedlots. And so the farm also had 8 very large hen houses where chickens were laying eggs every single day. The eggs get shipped up to be raised to be meat in Delaware. I asked VMAC Baldwin about this, and he quoted the Bible and noted that there were passages that talk about cows grazing in the meadows, but there were not passages that suggest chickens do the same. So he didn't see any issues with raising cattle on grass in accordance with his biblical ideals and chickens indoors in cages. The Baldwins are Christians, and VMAC is a dedicated member of the Gideons, which is an evangelical group that gives away Bibles. They usually have green covers. You've probably seen some of these folks as part of their missionary efforts. Though he's a very devout Christian and very dedicated to spreading the gospel, VMAC actually sends his cows to a halal slaughterhouse, Chaudhry Halal Meats, for slaughter because he felt that that was a better end for his animals. It was a smaller scale slaughterhouse. He had a really complicated relationship with the Muslim owner of that slaughterhouse, Abdul Chaudhry. As he and I talked about this, he misinterpreted basically everything about how halal slaughter works. He had misunderstandings of Muslims having to do this as sin offerings, and complicated ideas about what the slaughter meant. But mostly he saw his friendship as part of his missionary efforts. And so he saw it as a regular opportunity to try and convert a Muslim to Christianity. This is something I experienced pretty frequently in my conversations with him as well. As we talked, I was peppered with Bible quote quizzes, which I failed every single time because I do not have the Bible memorized. And he was often challenging me on my Jewish beliefs and practices and trying to convince me to convert to Christianity. And so I have a sense of what this looks like. And so the Baldwin beef, he does use some other slaughterhouses, especially in Virginia, but most of the Baldwin beef is actually halal meat, but that's often not advertised in the packaging. So in the Whole Foods packaging, it's very small but present. In the on-site farm packaging, it's not there at all. And this is because he understands that his customers were generally either secular foodies or Christians like himself who weren't seeking out halal meat and actually might not choose to purchase it if they understood that it was halal. And so in this way, Baldwin Beef is making some really interesting choices about navigating what's best for their animals, what's best for the consumers, what's best for their family, what's best for their business, and religious and secular ideas are kind of mixed up together in those decisions that they're making. The last site in the book is called Pearlstone Center. This is a second Jewish retreat center. They also have an on-site farm, but the reason that I put two Jewish retreat centers with farms in the book is because in the same year, they did something very different. So the year that I was doing this fieldwork, which was the summer of 2015, which was part of the Hebrew year 5775, was a Shemitah year. So Shemitah is the biblical agricultural sabbatical year. This is discussed many times throughout the Hebrew Bible. It is mentioned the first time in Exodus chapter 23, verses 10 and 11, where it says, 6 years you shall sow your land and gather in its yield, but in the seventh you shall let it rest and lie fallow. Let the needy among your people eat of it, and what they leave, the wild beast will eat. You shall do the same with your vineyards and your olive groves. And so Shemitah is a set of laws that dictate a year of rest for the land. So just as humans are commanded to work for 6 days and rest on the seventh, they are also commanded to work the land for 6 years and let the land rest in the seventh year. These laws are traditionally understood to only apply within the boundaries of the land of Israel, so the fact that I'm talking about Jewish farmers in the U.S. considering these at all is already an interesting interpretation move. But Jewish farmers and environmentalists in the U.S. have been talking about Shemitah for a couple decades now. So during the Shemitah year, Pearlstone decided to cancel their community-supported agriculture program. They canceled their fellowship program, they cover cropped their fields, and they focused their entire year of work on doing ecological restoration around the retreat center's land. They still ran all of their educational programs, but they focused those educational programs on Shemitah. And so they were teaching people about this practice. The buckwheat, barley, and oats that they used to cover crop their fields were restoring the soil by adding nitrogen and giving the soil time to rest and rebuild. Since they didn't have the usual have to grow the usual vegetables, they also worked on restoring this land. So I spent a lot of my time there clearing invasive plants from around their property, well, alongside other volunteers. The farm team also established a number of permaculture projects, which are mostly tree guilds, where you plant a tree and then you plant beneficial plants around it to keep away pests and also put nutrients into the ground for the tree. They also decided to try and use the year to rest and restore each other. So the staff for the whole retreat center were given one extra vacation day and 6 additional days off that they were meant to use to volunteer in their community during the Shemitah year. They also generally spent their time doing less intensive tasks. So for example, I spent an afternoon hanging lavender indoors, which was really different than when I was there the summer before, weeding beds in 90 degrees for 8 hours. And so everything about the year was about restoring people, the land, and the farm. For the programs and educational programming, the program staff adopted a Shemitah-themed game that they used throughout the year to help visiting school groups, some of which are Jewish and many of which are not. The Baltimore City Schools visit this farm. And so a lot of it was about educating people about why farms need to rest and where this was coming from. And then for the Jewish groups that came, they were using the Shemitah year to kind of deepen Jewish understandings of environmental values and some of what's in the Hebrew Bible. And so it was also the Shemitah year when I visited Adamah, where they were running their programs, working their farm, and doing, so in the same year, these two Jewish farms chose to do really different things. At Adamah, they told me they rotated their crop production through 7 fields all the time, so there was always one field at rest. And then they also established a community Shemitah garden for that year that was open to the public. And so even just looking at these two Jewish places, we see really different interpretations of Jewish law. In terms of religion at Pearlstone, I spent most of my time with the farm director and a Chesapeake Conservation Corps volunteer who was assigned there for the year, neither of whom was Jewish. So the farm director grew up Catholic, but was a practicing Shambhala Buddhist, and the Chesapeake Conservation Corps volunteer was Lutheran. And so this Shambhala Buddhist and Lutheran were enacting the Jewish biblical agricultural sabbatical year on a farm in Maryland, even though it's only supposed to apply in the land of Israel. And so, right, really interesting religious choices being made. And so hopefully you see from these examples that religious people are participating in the alternative food movement. All of these groups identified some issue in the industrial food system. Their concerns and solutions are really different, right? So we saw one Jewish farm cancel all of their programs and focus on Shemitah. The other ran all of their regular programs and kept the farm operational. One Christian group is choosing to eat raw vegan food, like in the Garden of Eden. Another is focusing on raising cows on grass and chickens indoors for meat and for eggs. And so each of these groups, right, people are kind of navigating ethical choices between what they see available on grocery store shelves and what they think should be there instead. I think this is worth paying attention to, right, both because there is a lot of darkness in the world, and so it's sometimes good to focus a little bit on what people are trying to do better. But also as the alternative food movement continues to grow, especially as concerns about climate change increase, it is important to note the involvement of these religious groups in this movement and understand that this isn't just wealthy, white, secular folks who are participating in trying to get us a better food system and better things to eat. So hopefully that gives you a sense of the kind of work that I do, and I'm happy to talk more about that at the coffee hour. Thank you.